I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dawn surprise.
I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling. I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going, in the sunshine of your love.
That would be the name of the song, Cream. Jason going way back for Monday's classic. You know what this reminds me of? Mad Men, which is having, in some ways, I think some episodes have been brilliant. I swear the writers were on acid when they wrote last night's episode. I mean, it is. Everybody went crazy. It was just, it's 1969, and you do have a lot of the hippie thing going on. But what happened last night, everybody just went nuts. It was a surreal episode. I'm seeing a lot of criticisms of it. I'm going to do a quick spoiler alert here. If you are catching up on Mad Men, if you have not watched last night's episode, or if you're in earlier seasons, you're not going to want to hear any of this, okay? I think there are two things I just have to mention. So if you're catching up, if you're going to just or if you're going to start watching the series, just I'm warning you, there are going to be two spoilers here. They won't permanently damage, you know, your understanding, and won't give away too much. Two really weird things, well, more than two, but two really weird things happen. Ginsburg, who's been kind of going off the deep end, goes all the way off the deep end. There's a scene that mimics a scene from 2001, A Space Odyssey, where Hal is reading the lips of the two astronauts. That is recreated. Ginsburg, again, if you're still listening and you don't want any spoilers, I need you to go away for about 30 seconds. Ginsburg, I'm going to just say this, cuts off one of his nipples, puts it in a jewelry box, and gives it to Peggy. And is later taken away in a straitjacket on a stretcher. Don and Megan have a menage a trois with one of her friends. I mean, it really, really... There are only two episodes left this year, and then they do the final seven next year. But it does end with Don Draper being Don Draper again, and I won't give that away. Don Draper is back to his manipulative self by the end of the episode. It's really pretty fascinating. By the way, almost done for the season is The Americans, the Soviet spies living as husband and wife in America, Washington in the 80s. Man, it's that good this season. And there's still a lot of shows I have. There's just so much time, you know, and I'm trying to catch up on my reading, which I'm years behind on, reading for leisure. I just, you know, so many hours in a day. Here's what this column by Bill Leaders is called, Mary Burke, Millionaire Underdog. I would call it Mary Burke, Poor Little Rich Girl. Let me just read some of this. There were, into the month of May, no signs in the front windows of Mary Burke's campaign office across the street from the state capitol in Madison. Nothing to broadcast her name to the many people passing by. That's an odd missed opportunity for a candidate struggling to make herself known. A Marquette Law School poll in March found that an astonishing 59% of respondents did not have either a favorable or unfavorable impression of Burke. They didn't know enough about her. In modern political campaigns, shaping these impressions often hinges on money. And Burke, despite her personal wealth from family business Trek Bicycle, where she was an executive, is not likely to match the financial firepower of the incumbent Governor Scott Walker. In the 2012 recall election, Walker's campaign spent $36 million. I'm trying to raise enough money to get my message out, Burke said in a recent interview at her inconspicuous headquarters. She vows to be deliberate in doing this because I do expect, unfortunately, that I will be greatly outspent. Burke, a Madison school board member and former State Commerce Department secretary, is the clear frontrunner among four Democrats vying to take on Walker this fall. Her personal wealth is seen as a key asset to her campaign, but part of her game plan is to impugn Walker's support. So what she's going to say is she's heavily outspent, even though she's wealthy, but I don't have that kind of my own money. Not enough to even have Burke for governor campaign signs in her campaign headquarters. Not enough to have campaign signs all over Wisconsin. She doesn't even have that kind of money. This is an excuse by leaders to cover for a completely incompetent campaign. Fellow talk show host Charlie Sykes and I were on a media panel at the Republican Party State Convention. I told that group, I said, now, I'm not trying to get irrationally exuberant, but I have a liberal friend who's connected in liberal politics who believes she's not even going to be competitive. We have already seen the incompetencies of this campaign. What's pointed out here is just the additional incompetencies. Do you know how incompetent it is that there is nothing in her campaign office windows to point out that it's her campaign office, campaign headquarters? This just seems to be amateur hour all the way around, and it's not just from Burke herself. It appears her campaign staff is inept. Now, they could get better at this, which is why I'm not going to get too excited. But knowing that still a large swath of Wisconsin doesn't know enough about her to have an opinion, she's done a miserable job, just a miserable job, of trying to get herself known. I would like to spend more time on this topic, but I do have one that I really want to get to. Peggy Noonan has a piece published over the weekend at the Wall Street Journal website and in the print edition Saturday of the Wall Street Journal. She points out the dangers of the Benghazi Select Committee, Trey Gowdy, the head of that committee, for Republicans to look into what happened to Benghazi. I won't read the whole thing, but her thesis is Benghazi isn't Iran-Contra, but the comparison reflects poorly on the Obama administration. Liberals and the media, but I repeat myself, liberals and the media are saying, look, this isn't Iran-Contra, you know. No, she points out it's worse. Because Iran-Contra was a president and those around him doing the wrong thing in an effort to do the right thing. And I still argue on policy, Reagan was right. But trying to affect that policy in the way he did was wrong. I accept that. But, her argument is, the scandal in Benghazi, there was nothing virtuous. There was nothing doing the wrong thing for the right reason. There was doing the wrong thing to cover your butt. But her point is well taken nonetheless. This is going to be very difficult because, in fact, I heard what's called a two-way. That's when a local radio station does an interview with a network analyst. This was an ABC radio analyst, and he was quickly dismissing this. Well, no, some things were done wrong, but this is no big scandal. This is the problem. The media has started paying a tad more attention to it after Jonathan Carl had that standoff, if you will, with Jay Carney at a White House briefing. The next day, they all started asking Carney questions. But their narrative, their template still is going to be nothing to see here, citizens. Move along, rather than do their jobs. And as several commentators have pointed out, had they done their jobs, there would be no need for an investigation. Whether it's 280 lives or 3,000 lives or four lives, did the administration fail here? Further, did the administration, and I think the bigger issue, try to cover up those failures? I think the answer is a resounding yes. Were the shoe on the other foot, and this was a Republican president, the media would be spending all sorts of time on this. But it isn't, so they're not. And whatever coverage they do will be an effort to undermine and thwart Republicans digging into this. They're not going to get any help at all from the media. And whatever they do unearth, with the exception of Fox News and conservative talk radio, it isn't going to be dug into at all. That is a difficult... The Republican Party often complains about the stacked media deck. They will never face it in a way they're going to face it here. The media is going to be the reverse, or inverse, I should say, inverse Woodward Bernstein. Rather than aggressively try to get to the truth, they're going to aggressively try to hide it and give cover to the Obama administration. And they will do so by saying that this is all about politics. This is all about embarrassing Hillary Clinton. In fact, the ABC radio analyst I heard today said this was all about trying to keep Hillary on the sideline in 2016, making Benghazi too toxic for her. Well, how does that strategy work if there's no there there? If there's no there there, that's a failed strategy. In fact, it will play in her favor. This is the challenge that Republicans are going to have. They are going to be confronted with the media who will say they're trumping this up, that you're doing this entirely for political purposes. Something else that has been pointed out, and this is true, one of the ways to avoid that is know what the hell you're talking about. It was pointed out when Hillary Clinton did her infamous "What difference does it make to Senator Ron Johnson?" nobody had an answer. Don't ask questions to which you don't already know the answer. Don't make this political. Don't make this grandstanding. And that's where a lot of people think Trey Gowdy was an excellent selection to head this committee. He's going to have to do the best job ever. And it is going to have to be about the facts and not showboating and not grandstanding and not everything else. That said, it's going to be a daunting task. It's 10:18.
The Jerry Bader Show.